Hello, everyone. Welcome to Queerly Recommended, the podcast where we recommend queer books, films, TV shows, and more. I'm Chris Bryant, a contemporary romance writer for Bold Strokes Books, and this week I'm recommending a 2023 Best Picture nominee.
And I'm Tara Scott. I review sapphic fiction at The Lesbian Review and Smart Bitches, Trashy Books. And this week, I am recommending a sapphic romance novel that is inspired by the films of Bollywood. Mm-hmm. So, as always, just want to take a minute to thank everyone who supports us through our Ko-fi, through our newsletter on Substack. We have links to both in the show notes. And if you have a friend that's looking for recommendations of books or films that are really great and are really queer, just let them know about the show. Riss, what's been going on with you in the last couple of weeks? Or what's going on soon?
Well, today, here, down here in the United States, it's tax day. When are your taxes due up in Canada? Do you have the same?
No. Well, we do have taxes. They do tax us.
I'm sure they do.
But I think ours are due April 30th.
So, okay. So you still have some time. So it's the same kind of concept.
We did it. Like, as soon as we get our things from work, like, we just go and drop everything off and pay some nice people to figure it out for us.
No, I always owe. And so I wait until the last day. So today I walked up to the post office and bought some stamps because people like me don't have stamps. It took me forever to find my checkbook to write the checks because what the hell is a checkbook? So,
well, and who has stamps also? Right. Let's go back to that. Nobody
has stamps. Right. Mm-mm.
You're 95 if you do.
Right. Especially if you have them on hand, you know. So, I might have an old crunchled one in my purse, like I maybe bought like 2 years ago, because you feel stupid. I need one.
The last
stamp.
Time you did taxes.
Right. So last year. So I just went to the little, they have like a little machine, a kiosk, and you can just buy stamps, you know, first class postage. Hmm. So I just did that and I popped them in the mail and then I went back, walked back home on my lunch hour. So taxes. And I'm getting ready for, I'm doing ERP Expo up in Niagara Falls next month. I'm not doing it. I just mean that I have a booth there and our awesome listener, Tegan Shepherd, she will be with me and we will be selling queer books.
Yay. If you go on to that, go see
swing
them.
By for a special gift. Just mention the podcast and we'll come up with something cute to give you.
Do the actors still go to that?
Yes. Yes, they do. They do. And this is the one I love this part because Tim, who plays Doc Holliday, you know, he always comes up to the vendors and he always buys something from each vendor.
That is so sweet. So now how many of your books does he have at this point?
Only has
two.
Just
keep a list ready for
me. I'm just going to keep a list. Buddy, you got this last time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're going to get a little spicier this year. No, I'll probably give him Catch.
Oh, yeah.
For
good
sure.
One. I mean, the Lammy nominated Catch.
The Lammy nominated Catch. Thank you.
You're Tim. You should have this one. It's been nominated. Right.
It's been nominated for a big award.
Mm-hmm.
So, you should do that. Yeah. So they have, you know, the thing is they have like the photo ops and stuff like that. And I just don't know the setup for this one. You know, I don't know if we're going to be downstairs with all the like the events or if we're going to be in some different place because I've had it both ways. so
your favorite
my favorite, so I'm hoping that it's all on the same level and so then we get a lot of traffic, a lot of people, you know, everybody wants queer books, what love, what, yes, I'm very excited about it. ERPers are like the best supporters of one another, of each other and stuff. It's just beautiful. I love being an ERPer and I love the love that we have in our small community. It's just
it is kind of amazing to me still that there are so many people who are shocked to learn that there's so many queer books and that there's so much queer romance. Because there's some that they think the world sort of starts and stops with Casey McQuiston, which like nothing against her. I really loved her book, One Last Stop. Or like maybe they know about, what's her name? She wrote the books like Astrid Parker, Delilah Green.
Oh, stop. Who is that?
But you know who I mean. Like,
yeah.
There's like a handful of traditionally published ones, which again, we've talked about this before. I think it's amazing that we're getting sapphic fiction published by traditional publishers because it's validating that demand in the market.
Right.
But then so many people don't realize, okay, and once you've run through this handful of books, guess what? There's thousands like more waiting for you over here. Literally thousands.
Right.
There's all the tropes you love. They exist.
They do.
So
to make myself more marketable, because that's what I do, I actually opened a TikTok shop. Did I tell you this? Did we have this conversation?
You told me, but I can't remember if you did on the podcast.
Oh.
And yeah.
It's amazing. Like, I do nothing. Mm-hmm. And I haven't posted a video in a very long time. I just did like a hot girl cover book sale mm-hmm. on TikTok and got some sales off of that. So, I mean, it's just, you know, the younger generation, the people who don't know that we have all these books, you know, book talk is a thing. It really is. Mm-hmm. And so I'm sending my books all over and it's great. I love it.
Authors, if you don't have a book talk shop yet, I think that's your sign that you need to get on it.
Yep. I have reached out to several of my author friends and I have highly recommended it to them. And I had to like explain what I'm talking about. And I would be more than happy to help people set it up. It's super easy. So, you know, here's the funny thing. I did it and forgot about it. And then I got this hate message from just the TikTok shop people. And they're like, hey, you have orders you need to send out. I'm like, oh, okay. So,
sorry.
Because I wasn't, because, you know, you get notifications from TikTok and you're just like, mm-hmm. whatever. Because like friends will send me TikToks or, you know, they'll tag me or something, like somebody viewed your profile or something, you know. So I just tend to ignore them. Mm-hmm. But now I have it as a separate app and I look at it religiously so that I do not screw this up again.
Good. Very good.
Yeah. Anyway, mm-hmm. that's what's been going on in my life. What about you? What has been going on in yours?
Well, we're recording this on a Monday, which actually we've been doing a lot lately. But this time it's because I was gone for the weekend. I had to go to Vancouver for work. I had to go to a thing at a conference, but it was so nice just to get out of town for the weekend. It was somehow managed to hit Vancouver with like perfect, perfect, beautiful weather, super sunny, nice and warm, not too hot. Got to see a couple of friends that I used to work with at my last company. And yesterday, one of them, we just walked for like a couple of hours because it's a super walkable city. I maybe wish I had my normal sneakers that I wear when I'm walking because my one foot has like 3 blisters now. My poor sweet baby foot. It'll be fine. It'll be fine. It just meant today, I got home today. I was like, maybe I'm not going to work out today because I don't want to put a
upper
sneaker on this foot.
It's just
that's what
body
I thought.
Today.
I was like, do I need to wear shoes on chest day? Nope. Can I just make sure not to drop a weight on my foot?
Right.
And just now I took the day instead. But we walked down to the beach at English Bay. I didn't even know it was going to be there, but my friend pointed out, I saw the AIDS memorial that was there.
Oh.
So last summer, I saw the one in Toronto. This summer, I saw the one in Vancouver. It's probably not fair to compare because it's not like, you know, the way we honor people in different cities is more important or anything like that.
Right.
But the one in Vancouver, I think it's like a static. It just sort of is what it is. It's not being updated anymore. The thing that I found interesting about the one in Toronto is that it is a living memorial. So it does continue to get updated year over year. But that was a really good, powerful thing to check out. We also stopped in the gay district. I tried to see if I could, you know, pick up a couple souvenirs for my kids and turned out no. That was the nope. It was either inappropriate or extremely expensive.
I'm
spending $25 for a pair of socks for a child.
No. You spend $25 on a coat for a child.
That's right. Or like there's really cool like a mesh kind of shirt, but it also had like little, it was like rainbowy, but also had like little, I don't know, I can't remember what were the little designs on it. And then I looked and it was $45 and I was like, this is gonna rip in like 30 seconds.
Right. Or get the dog nail stuck on it.
That
always is great.
Yep. It would take a second. So we didn't do that, but it was great. I think it's been 16 or 17 years since I've been to Vancouver. And it was just one of those, like, why don't I go here more often? It's an hour and a half flight. It's like the easiest flight ever. Mm-hmm. It's super beautiful. It's right on the ocean. So I think I want to do that more often. So yes, I went for a work thing, but I also, and that was also great. Like getting to see coworkers that I don't work in the same city with too, because I'm very, very, very lucky that I love the people I work with. I have not always been as lucky in my career, and not everybody gets to be that lucky. So it's just like a really nice, fast, soul filling weekend. And now I'm mentally drained.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. Thankfully, traveling always does that.
Mm-hmm. I took today off kind of proactively. I thought, you know, if I'm not taking a weekend, if my weekend is sort of not recharging at all, I should at least take the Monday. And I'm really glad I did. Like even frankly, putting together the outline for this episode, I was like, it's a struggle pulling some thoughts together. But my brain came through.
Yay.
At 3 p.m. it came back. So
yay.
I have hopes. All right, Chris, what have you been reading or watching in the last couple of weeks?
Oh, my God. We need to talk about 911.
Okay, what is this? Because I see people talking about it sometimes on Twitter, and I don't actually really understand what the show is. And I think you okay. even talked.
Yes,
I think you might have talked about it in the past. I know, but I forget things. I have ADHD, and I was probably unmedicated when you recommended it.
All right. So there are two 911s. There's one that takes place in Los Angeles, I think. Mm-hmm. And that's the one I'm going to talk about. But there's also one that takes place in Texas. And that's the one that has like everybody queer on that show.
Mm-hmm. And they're both, it's like, it's not a reality show.
No, no, no. It's like, right. like the one in Texas has like Rob Lowe. And I mean, it's just, but it's like a medical emergency type firefighter type EMT show.
But like sort of a comedy?
No, not at all. Not a comedy at all. It's a drama.
With Rob Lowe.
I know. Right?
Interesting.
He's like a captain or something. But so we're going to talk about the California one, which has, you know, Angela Bassett, who has my heart. Like she is in it. I fucking love
her. She's amazing.
She is. And so like I will like watch it all the time. So I'm watching it a few weeks ago, just so that everybody knows there is there are a lot of hunky firefighters in this. They're going to have the hunky. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
And there's this one sweet, not super smart, sweet firefighter named Buck, you know, and he has been a ladies man forever. He's like an adorable puppy. He has no fear. He's very loyal and he's a daredevil. So he makes like the perfect firefighter. And he's just like his sister is the 911 operator, you know, so it kind of incorporates the 911 operators, the responders, including Angela Bassett, who is a cop. So Buck's best friend at the fire station is Eddie. Good-looking guy. I mean, same situation, good-looking, hunky. And Eddie just kind of meets a random dude. Like, and they start hanging out and they're like playing basketball and they're going to concerts. The guy is like he's a pilot. And he flies them to Vegas for a concert and stuff like that. And so Buck's feeling really left out and very lonely because he's not invited. So like Eddie, you know, calls him up and he's like, hey, what are you doing this weekend? You know, blah, blah, blah. And he's all excited because he thinks he gets to go on their bro trip. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, I need somebody to watch Christopher, his kid. And he goes, and Christopher loves you. Will you watch Christopher? And Buck's like totally dejected at this point. So he finds out where they're playing basketball and he and another firefighter, who, by the way, is not hunky. he was not the hunky one. Okay. They go find this pickup game and Buck's like, yeah, I love basketball. And so he kind of like, he hurts his friend. Like he gets so involved in it, he like does something and his friend falls and twists his ankle. Eddie. Yeah. So Eddie falls and everybody can tell that there's some sort of like masculine aggression going on. Like what is happening? And so Buck leaves and he hasn't even called his friend. He doesn't know like if his friend's broke his foot. He doesn't know if Eddie's like sprained it or what the deal is. And so he's too embarrassed like for the way he acted in front of his friend. And the guy, the new friend, his name is Tommy. Eddie's new friend is Tommy. So Tommy shows up and Buck's like, what are you doing at my house? And he's like, well, you know, I just kind of want to talk, you know, I didn't mean to get in the way of your friendship with Eddie and blah, 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 blah. And so I'm like watching it and they're talking and I notice that they're really close. Like sometimes it's funny because like on The Resident, there was this one character that was always real close to people. And I'm just like, you're in the personal space bubble. And this time it was like they were kind of close, and I was just joking. You should kiss. Kiss up, you know.
Yeah.
And it happened. They kissed. And I'm like, what? And so people on TikTok are like showing their reaction, like they're like whoever, they're just filming their reactions of it. And it's hilarious because, of course, you have so many people. Oh my gosh, this is the best thing ever. You know, Buck is bi. And he's like, yeah. I'm still trying to figure it out. Yeah. You know, I'm attracted to this man, you know, and he's kind of embarrassed at first. They go out on a date and he tries to be all like masculine and like, oh yeah, we're just going to pick up some chicks after this. And he says this to Eddie because Eddie shows up at the one restaurant out of the way and he shows up with his girlfriend. And so like, yeah, we're just grabbing pizza and then we're going to go hit the bar and pick up chicks. And so Tommy's like, you're not ready for a relationship. We're not on the same, you know, level of what we expect out of this. And so Buck finds him and he's like, I really want to try with you. I really want to have a relationship with you. That happened in the second episode. I mean, not the second episode, but this last episode.
Mm-hmm.
Like everybody is blowing up about this because nobody expected this. Like I said, he has been a womanizer since the beginning of the show. He's always with a new girl. And all of a sudden now he's kissing a dude. Love it. Yeah.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. And they have a lesbian couple on the show that are adopting. They have been in the process of trying to adopt a baby, and they have finally figured out the social worker has recommended a 9-year-old girl. And so there's always queerness in these shows. 911 has like whichever one you want to watch, or if you watch both, there's so much inclusion, and I just love it for that.
Nice.
Yes. So that I've been watching that, and I finished The Resident.
Nice. Was it good?
All 6 seasons. You know, I always feel so like hollow after a show ends. And I'm just like, I miss everybody at Chastain because I was the hospital. Yeah. And it's just like, it's always it's a bittersweet feeling, especially, you know, racing through it and getting it done. And now I'm like, I don't know what to watch. But yeah. I did find something to watch.
All right.
So I watched something completely, totally different because I'm like, I cannot do another medical show because I watched Nurses, which is great. And then I watched The Resident, which is great. And now I need something different.
Mm-hmm.
So I was really excited because Amazon has been advertising the show called Fallout.
Mm-hmm.
And you know me, anything apocalyptic, I'm in.
You are. That's true.
This is true. So I binged it.
Neil's all been watching episode. It. Actually, he might be caught up. I don't know. But he said it's really, really good and I should never watch it because it's too violent and I would hate that. And I was like, cool. I didn't like the game. Like, I tried playing Fallout 4 and I went through the whole, like, created the character. I walked through the underground bunker, whatever that bullshit you're supposed to do down there. He's laughing right now as he's editing this and he's, like, calling it bullshit. Right. Talking about, like, I'm doodling around, whatever. And then I got up to the surface and then I walked in a direction and there was this like building that was full of people that you had to kill. And like, I'm not good at first person shooters. Mm-hmm. Like, I can do them occasionally. Mass Effect is like the shout out to Tegan Shepherd, who I know also loves Mass Effect. Or I suppose another shout out to Tegan. Like, I loved that game, but for the most part, I don't like them because it's like you need quick reaction speed. And they're like, all these people shooting me. And I was like,
nope.
And then I just like walked away. I was like, nope,
this I'm out.
It's not. For me. So even when it was like, oh, there's a Fallout show, I was like, cool, a Fallout show exists. This is good information to have, but probably not for me. How did you like it though?
I was very confused. Like, because I don't play games.
Mm-hmm.
I still play Toon Blast. I'm up to almost episode or level 10,000.
Holy shit.
I know.
That is so many levels. Oh my God.
No, it is. It is. So the games, like, I don't know, like, if they follow games or anything like that, or what's a game and what isn't a game. So I was just like trying to figure this out. I'm like, okay, so this is like 1960s, but then like there's a Cold War and then all of it jumps around a lot. It jumps around and then it finally like buttons up at the very end, the last like 15 minutes. You're like, oh my God. Oh my God.
It all makes sense. Okay.
It all makes sense. And they are doing a season 2. They already signed up to do a season 2.
So
I watched the whole thing.
Now I remember it was somebody else who told me this, not Neil, because I ended up also talking about it on the weekend with a coworker. We were walking and talking. He said that what they're doing with it that was interesting is it's not tied to the story. Like, it's not tied to the plot of any particular Fallout games. Like, if you haven't played the Fallout game, it doesn't really matter.
Okay.
It's like another story created in the world. So it's like concurrent with the stories that are happening in the games. And I thought that was an interesting way to do it too, because it would give the writers and the showrunners, like, it would give them more latitude. They can do more things and they don't have to be constrained by, okay, these characters have to say these things or they have to do these things. You can have new characters. You can have them do kind of whatever you want them to, as long as it works within that world.
You know, I didn't think it was as violent. I mean, you're talking to the Walking Dead girl here. So, like,
well, that's it. Which Fallout to me is
super tame, super tame. Because I'm like, gore, blood.
And cats? I'm like the Great Canadian Baking Show.
I'm like that too. but I loved it. And too bad it isn't queer, because I would totally recommend it. But yeah, you're like lost for like three episodes. You're like, I don't know what the fuck's going on. Mm-hmm. I have no idea. It's so hard to figure it out. And so I'm just like, I'm along for the ride. That's at this point, I'm just going to see where this goes. So, and then it was just enough to keep me going.
Would you say for the people, like, say if there's somebody who started and they're like, I don't know what the fuck is happening, and they bailed, is it actually worth picking it up and like just pressing on? Like, is the payoff worth it?
Payoff is worth it.
Nice.
It is worth it. And I'm about to talk to Neil when he's done with it.
Okay. Okay.
Anyway, so that is what I have been reading and watching. Mm-hmm. Not even reading, just watching. What about you? What have you been reading or watching?
Okay. So Drag Race season 16. I was shocked because the week that we recorded our last episode. So for years, they've had a top four. And so I'm expecting, you know, we have top four going in to do their episode. And I'm thinking, and then RuPaul is going to say, everybody goes on to the finale. RuPaul did not say that. They have a top three. And unfortunately, the queen that was eliminated was your Kansas City queen.
Oh, no.
But she made it to top four. That's pretty good. Which is incredible. And I mean, frankly, she wasn't going to win anyway, because the person who wins is doing a lip sync, and like an incredible costumer made most of her own costumes. And it's unbelievable what she's able to make. Not a dancer at all. So like the dancing just wasn't going to work out. So
that's too bad.
And then they had kind of like an interim week between. So they did that. They have their top three, and then this coming week, so it'll be like right before the Friday before the episode drops, actually, we'll have the winners crowned. But in between, they had what they called a lip sync Lollapalooza, which they brought back all the eliminated queens, including Q, the one from Kansas City. And they did like a March Madness style, like these two lip sync and these two and these two and these ones go on and whatever. And then the person who wins, I thought they were going to say that person would be in the top four. They didn't do that. But the person who won got $50,000. Which is pretty great. As a, like, you didn't win the show, so you didn't win the however much. It was like $200,000 or $250,000. It's up for grabs, but 50 is not nothing. That'll be not bad. Good.
Right, exactly.
And what made me so happy was to see the most underestimated queen of the season, the most by far, made it all the way to the final lip sync.
She's
awesome. A New York queen. Her name is Megami. She's a big cosplayer and just seemed to have this like really sweet and tender heart. And she kept getting picked because there's this like, well, I'm going to win. And it's like, bitch, you didn't. Because it turns out she's actually a really great performer. It was so, and she beat one of, there were like two lip sync assassins this season and she beat one of them. Wow. She beat like the queen of flips from Miami. It was incredible. It made me so happy. So that's almost done. I don't know what is happening with Drag Races after that's done. Maybe it's Down Under. The thing that's interesting with Down Under, though, is RuPaul is not going to be hosting anymore. They're giving the hosting to Michelle Visage. Yes, who has been the lead judge in the U.S. since season 3, I think. And that's, I wonder, sad. If they, it's really interesting. Like, I wonder if they're having her do it this year so then they can identify a local queen from Australia or New Zealand to take over, because like Canada, RuPaul doesn't do most of the franchises, like only does US and UK now. So Canada has a former one, France has a former competitor from the US as well, Mexico, although I think something might have happened there. Anyway, there's so many of them, I can't remember all of them, and it's often a local queen, so I wonder if that's what they're doing there. So maybe that's what I'm watching next. But I started watching Blown Away, the glass blowing reality show on Netflix. Have you seen it?
I think I might have.
It's a really great treadmill show. I think we've talked about treadmill shows before. Like, you just put it on in the background while you're doing something. It's really great for that. I finished Somebody Feed Phil, which is my last treadmill show. I kind of always need to have one going. I don't have a treadmill, but that's, you know, that's just what we call it. And it's really interesting to see what people can make with glass. And I didn't know anything about glass blowing before. Right. And how, like, when glass gets that hot, like, it's liquid, but then it turns almost into like a putty. Like, it's so cool to watch stuff being formed, but it's also so tense. Like, there's times where I'm tense for them because I'm like, oh my God, don't let it break. Oh no, it broke.
Don't burn yourself.
No. And there is some queer rep in it. Like, there's a queer contestant that won the first season. There's a queer contestant in the third season. I watched two seasons in the last 2 weeks and I've just started.
Wow.
I know. Because they're also only like 25 minutes an episode.
Oh, well, yeah, that's those fast.
Short episodes, seasons aren't too long. So if you're looking for that kind of show, that's fun. I read some books.
Books are nice.
One of them is a romance. And here's the thing that I love. Because you were just talking about the con that you're going to.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what the theme is? It takes place around a fan con.
Yay! So that's always the best.
Holsted and Andy by Olivia Janae. So we follow the perspective of Freddie Wynn. She's a former college soccer star. She's a bartender. She coaches kids in soccer on the side. She was really supposed to go quite far, but she had an injury. And unfortunately, that's not kind of what she can do anymore. So there's this like tension between her and her dad, who had these dreams of her being a professional soccer player. But the book opens with her going to a conference for the fandom for this cop show. And she has a crush on these two women that a lot of people ship on the show. And one of them is Andrea Canton. And the two of them, they have a bunch of these like random encounters. They keep running into each other. And then kind of Freddie's trying not to get her hopes up too high. Because like, come on, Andrea's straight. Of course she's straight. Like, she must be straight, and I just have a crush, and that's silly. Except, is she straight? Because at one point, they're in Andrea's hotel room, and maybe they kiss, so perhaps she's not straight.
That never happens to me at these cons that I go to.
Well, that is the one thing I'm going to say about this book. I feel like more than most romances I read, I really had to suspend disbelief. Like, I think so much of reading romance... Like, yeah, you're often suspending disbelief, but you do that when you read fiction anyway, right? Like, it's literally something that an author made up. But in this case, I really had to do it because also that particular scene was like an only one bed situation in Andrea's room. And I'm like, would an actor who was like, hey, I'm open to banging a fan, but it wasn't that kind of a situation in this case. So I didn't care because it was so cute. And it was really convenient for them because they live in the same city, which means that, you know, when they get back to real life, they can start to see can we make a relationship work? But Andrea is not out. Like, as an actress, she's closeted. And Freddie's parents are these like very conservative Vietnamese people who just will not, like, she came out to them, but they refuse to acknowledge that she's gay. So I liked this one a lot. I felt like at the con, it was especially like fun and frothy. And it just has that, like, it somehow managed to bring in, you know, like that just buzzing energy that you get.
Oh yeah. I love it. Yes.
When you get all these people together. And it had like all the usual moments. So like Freddie's with her friends attending these like main stage events where the cast are doing a panel and talking about things. She goes to get her photos taken with them. She sees them at different like meals and things. But then we also see some of her private moments with Andrea, too. And it's funny because it opens, like, when it first opens, she's getting in so stupidly late because she's a bartender. Bars, you know, close late. Mm-hmm. And that's when Andrea also rolls in with her bodyguard. And her bodyguard is such a fucking dick. And so it's just this, like, almost comedy of errors situation between them. But it leaves that lasting impression. So that when Andrea sees her at other times, like it kind of works and makes sense. So that it's this like, well, why would she notice one person out of the crowd unless she had a one-on-one encounter with them separately? So it kind of, it sets that up in a good way. And I also like at one point one of them is talking about how much they love Buffy and the other one's not seen it. And there's just this like, how dare
what?
You? And
I
it's
know.
Like,
what?
Right. So like giving this nod to like, there's so many fandoms out there. So I like that this is the one that gets brought in. One of the things that I really especially liked about it is we see Freddie is really good at making that distinction of, okay, yes, I had a crush on Andrea's character, but she is not her character. She is her own person, and this is who I'm actually falling for. And we see that Andrea is not necessarily used to that. Like, people don't really always look deeper. They often do confuse her for her character. And so she does run kind of hot and cold at first in a way that I was like, oh, like, you see her, like, the book isn't ever, it's not really told from her perspective, but you see her struggle with that, like, oh, this girl is cute, but can I trust? Is she in it for me? Or is she in it for my character? And something else I thought was really interesting, because usually in celebrity romances where the celebrity is closeted, it's only the celebrity that's closeted. And in this case, we have kind of sort of comparable situations for both of them. So Andrea's closest people know that she's gay because she wasn't closeted before. But when she got an agent, her agent said, like, you need to keep that under wraps. You're not going to be able to have a good career if you're out as a lesbian. And then Freddie has her parents, who she did come out to like more than a decade ago, but they reacted so badly, especially her mother reacted so horrifically. And it just like fractured the relationship at that point. So she thought like, okay, my mom's going to need a few months to get used to this. It has literally never come up since then. So she can't talk about girlfriends. She can't talk about being queer. She can't bring a girlfriend home. So yes, this is a story about a fan and an actress falling for each other, but it's also really more about embracing authenticity and can you make the tough choices that you need to make so you can be yourself. So I had fun with this one. I think others might too, especially if you're in any of the fandoms, like if you're into fanfic, if you're into shipping couples on TV shows or films or whatever, this would be a fun one to check out.
Cool.
So the other one I read, it was very recently released, and it's called A Sweet Sting of Salt by Rose Sutherland, who I'd never heard of before, which makes sense because it's her debut book.
So
that was the other thing I learned. It takes place in Nova Scotia in the 1800s, and it's told from the perspective of Jean, who is a midwife. Her mom died when she was quite little. Her dad died, I can't remember how long ago, but anyway, she lives alone in his place. She pretty much keeps to herself. And her only real friend is the midwife that she apprenticed with and like her family. So she's friends with that family. They're kind of like a surrogate family for her. And people will whisper about her because the mother of her childhood best friend is a gigantic bitch who likes to say things about her. But everyone respects her skills as a midwife because like she has saved that possibly couldn't have been otherwise. She was handling breech births in the 1800s. Like she had ways to deal with that. Right. So she is not liked, but she is respected in her community. And one night during a terrible storm, she hears a cry. And then she kind of like goes to investigate and she's shocked because it's the wife of the neighbor who lives on the next block. So again, 1800s, people don't live close to each other necessarily unless you're right in town. And she lives kind of outside of town. And everyone knows. So Tobias is like a fisherman and everybody knows that he went off and he got married and brought back this wife. Nobody's met her. Nobody really knows her. Mm. She only speaks Scottish. It's this very weird thing. And they're just like, how the hell did he get somebody? Like what? It's just this like, how did he get a woman? So Jean takes her in right away. And this woman gives birth pretty much on the spot. And Jean's just like, holy fuck, what is happening? This was fast. Why wasn't I brought? Like, usually the husband will say, hey, it's time. Can you come? And she didn't even know this woman was pregnant.
Right.
So the whole thing just seems really odd to her. Because again, like Murin, I think that's how you pronounce her name, can't really speak English. Everything is odd. So she just tells Tobias like, hey, you know what? I really think Murin should stay here with me for a week so I can help her learn how to take care of the baby. Like everything's probably fine, but her energy is just off and whatever. And he kind of goes along with it. And he seems nice enough to Jean, but Murin doesn't really seem to like him.
Ooh.
And so like when he's around, Murin is silent. And when he's away, she's starting to pick up English and like fairly rapidly. And so the more time Jean spends with her, the more she starts to think that maybe things are not okay in this marriage. And she knows it's best to stay outside, like just stay away from other people's business, but she just can't help it because Mirren is really lovely and she's funny. And maybe Jean starts to kind of fall for her, even though she's like, no, I'm not. I'm definitely not. And it's like, yes, you are. In the meantime, Tobias just gets like weirder and weirder, the more it's clear that like Jean, Mirren, and the baby might all be in danger. And so the real question is, can Jean save this woman and keep them all safe? It's so beautifully written and it's really hard to put down. And so I would say this book has a romance. I do not think that it is a romance. And if you like gothic novels, like if you were reading like Wuthering Heights and some of those like old school gothic, like this is a great one. There's only one reason that this is not an official recommendation, and it's because I can't talk about it in the kind of depth that I want to talk about it. Because if I do, it would really kind of spoil it.
Yeah.
And the reason for this is that it is a retelling of an old folk tale that's called The Selkie Wife. And so here's what I will say to people. I absolutely recommend that you read this book. Do not read that folk tale before you read the book. It's not one that's really as popular in kind of the North American knowledge. Some people will know it. They'll have come across it because of sort of certain films or whatever. But if you don't know it, don't read it. Because if you read it first, it's going to take some of the magic and the tension out of this one. And I actually think it works better as a gothic novel if you don't know going in. The other thing that I'll say, because some of you might have said to yourself, okay, but this is about women in the 1800s. And those stories often have terrible endings. I said the same thing. Now, Chris, I told you
at some point
within the last few months that I don't read endings anymore.
Lies.
I usually don't read endings anymore, but because this is not a romance, it has a romance, and because it involves sapphic women in the 1800s, I had to check the ending just because I had to know, like, is this going to be a good ending or is this going to be a bad ending?
Right.
And I'm sure there are a lot of other people that are wondering the same thing. I'm not going to say what it is here, but if anyone absolutely needs to know before you read it, I'm going to put a link in the show notes to a recent post on the Smart Bitches Trashy Books website where I can't remember if it's every week or every other week, we do a whatcha reading post where literally we just sound off on what it is that we're reading. I mentioned this book and I did share whether it had a happy or an unhappy ending for that very reason. One of the things I love about writing for Smart Bitches Trashy Books is they use a spoiler tag function where you can put information behind a spoiler tag so people can choose to expand it and look at that information or not and then move on without it. So if anybody needs to know, absolutely go there and check it out. And I absolutely recommend A Sweet Sting of Salt. It's just, I've been telling a bunch of my real life friends that they should read this one because it's just that good. It's going to be another one of my top reads for the year, but I don't feel like I can say anything particularly substantive about it. So go read it.
Okay.
Chris, what is your official recommendation for the week?
So my official recommendation is Maestro. Best Picture nominee in 2023, directed by Bradley Cooper, starring Bradley Cooper. And guess who I didn't think about once while watching this movie? Bradley Cooper. I did not. He was that good. Yeah. So here's the synopsis. Maestro is a historically accurate portrayal of Leonard Bernstein's life and career, emphasized by the opening quote from Bernstein himself. The film delves into Bernstein's complex personal life, including his extramarital affairs and the challenges he faced in his marriage to Felicia, I think it's Montalegre. She's an actress.
Okay.
So I really enjoyed this movie. I put it off because I'm like, why do I care? Why do I want to watch a movie about Maestro? I mean, I love music, but I don't know anything about composing or reading music. I just don't. I can't do that.
Yeah.
But I was trying to find something to recommend and I had started a few shows that just didn't make the cut. Yeah. And so then yesterday I'm just sitting there and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to see if this is worth it. And I absolutely love this movie.
Really?
I did. Like, I was not expecting that. So Leonard is called upon in his mid-20s to step in to conduct the New York Philharmonic at Carnegie Hall, and he nails it. Like, the original maestro, I guess, he is sick. So they call him up, say, hey, can you do this? And he's in bed with a dude. So he, like, jumps up. So immediately, you know, like, okay, like, we know. So yeah. He jumps up and he, like, doesn't even have time to shower. He, like, throws on his clothes, or his tuxedo, and he runs out there and he kills it. Fucking nails it. And he becomes, like, a superstar overnight. Just a massive superstar.
Wow.
And, yeah. So there's something about creative people that I've known that just kind of have this free, like, free style of life, I guess, if you will. Mm-hmm. Especially if they're successful. I feel like almost rules don't apply.
Yeah.
But so he meets Felicia at a party, and he's, like, enthralled by her, like, absolutely enthralled with her. And so they kind of start talking, and great cast, by the way. Sarah Silverman is his sister. And she talks to Felicia. She's like, you're not my brother, right? You know everything about my brother? And she's like, oh, yeah, we know. I know about that, and I'm okay with it. So I'm like, this could be interesting. Yeah, this could be interesting.
So,
he is very charismatic. I mean, you could just tell. And I don't know anything about him in real life, like what he did, other than West Side Story. I know that he's West Side Story. And I remember his name from the REM song, It's the End of the World as We Know It. Like, that was me going into this movie. Mm-hmm. Like, so I knew nothing about him. Like, when he's at this party where he meets his wife, his boyfriend is there. And his boyfriend is the gorgeous man with the chiseled jaw, Matt Bomer, I think that's how you pronounce it. Is it Bomer?
I know who you're talking about, yeah.
Like, beautiful man, absolutely beautiful man. And he kind of breaks up with him, and he and Felicia get married. So it's kind of like, what does this mean? Is it just for fun? Like, does he, you know, who does he love? And he really does love his wife. I mean, you can tell that he loves his wife. They have three children together, but he still loves men, and he still has indiscretions, and he still falls for students. And he still falls for, like, whoever gives him a lot of attention. So he's that kind of person. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we always talk about how hard it was for women to be queer during the 50s, 40s, 60s, that time frame. Mm-hmm. And how they had to marry and have children and just kind of, like, lead these not really fake lives, but just not their authentic self. And that's kind of the same thing for men. And it never dawned on me, like that was a thing. It never dawned on me until I watched this movie. Mm-hmm. And, like, he ends up years later, he runs into Matt Bomer, I don't even think I'm saying his name right, but we'll just call him Matt, because I don't remember his character name, but he's Matt. And he's there. Matt is there with his wife, and they have a baby. Mm-hmm. And the whole time, you know, he's like, oh my gosh, you have a baby. And he leans down to the little baby and he's like, I slept with both your parents. So just that kind of frolicky freedom. I feel like, even though I'm married, I can still do this. And and the whole time, Felicia thinks she can handle it, but she really can't. So there's a lot of tension for a while. You know, the older they get, the more she's just like, okay, he's not going to change regardless of what I do. And it becomes an issue when his daughter hears rumors about him, and the wife's like, absolutely, she does not need to know, because he was going to tell her. It's like, I like men and I like women, you know. And the wife begged him, do not say anything, do not talk about this, do not discuss this with your children. She's embarrassed, you know. She is embarrassed for herself, for the marriage, for the family. So this is definitely a relationship movie. It's not about his successes, it just is about his relationship after his successes, type thing. I think the acting is absolutely superb. How he did not win an Academy Award. Bradley Cooper didn't exist the minute the movie started.
Yeah.
The minute it started, I did not see him as that. But, you know, I mean, yes, both Leonard and Bradley are, like I said, charismatic people. But, like, I didn't think of him once. And the cinematography is amazing, because the movie is black and white and also color. And I was so into it that I didn't even notice when it switched to color. I couldn't tell you when it switched. Like, did it happen when color became available, or was it like past present thing? I had no idea. I was so into it. And all of a sudden I'm like, how come the grass is green? It was never before. Like, what? Yeah. So just the way they actually filmed the movie really brought about the emotions too. And I found out that, you know, because Bradley Cooper, he directed it, he produced it. Like, Steven Spielberg was involved in this movie. There's a lot of big names in this movie. Like, I'm looking at the credits going, oh my gosh, look at all these people involved in this. And it's funny because I know nothing about conductors, like at all, like nothing. Yeah. Like, they just do this. And I'm like, I don't know what that means. Like, it's at the low, like, is the beat on the low or is it on high? So anyway, I read that he studied conducting for 6 years in order to nail.
What?
6 minutes. Yes. 6 years he studied. And like, they almost play the whole song, I think, when he does this. And it's just amazing. I mean, I'm going to be impressed because I don't know if he's doing it right or wrong. His acting is spot on. So I'm like, I'm a total believer. And so he actually did learn for 6 years. So I'm wondering, like, how long was he trying to do this movie? Like, I don't know. Yeah. Anyway, it was an emotional movie that plucked at my little queer heartstrings. Was it a good ending? I mean, you know how these biographies, whatever, you know.
Sure.
Everybody dies in the end. So, I mean.
Well, that's just true of life.
That's just, yeah, that's just life in general. So, but I really did like, I felt like that would be my scene. You know, if I got my big break, I would totally be a douchebag, sort of, kind of, not really. But just, you know, that freedom, like, yeah, I'm married. Yeah, I have kids, but I can still go out and like have fun. You know, I feel like he just had this like free spirit, and yeah, it was just, it was a very good movie. So I recommend it. Yeah.
Very cool. All right.
Yeah.
Everybody check it out.
Yeah. what is your official recommendation?
Okay. So my official recommendation is a novella called Delanya by Talia Bhatt. It translates, I think I looked on Google Translate, and it translates to bride in from Hindi. So Isha Arora is our main character. She's what's kind of known as an NRI, non-resident Indian. So like a citizen of India who's not living within India. But she grew up splitting her time. Her parents are married, but she split her time between the US and India. So she went to school in the States while living with her father, but her mother lives in India. And so she spent the summers with her mother. She is an artist. She had a chance to do an MFA in art. And she, like, she has the acceptance letter, but she's been told that a marriage has been arranged for her. So she's agreed to return to India instead. She is not thrilled about this, but she also doesn't really feel like she has a choice, even though she's had a ton of latitude in her life. Like, she's she's a rich kid, and she got to like grow up in the States with all the privileges that were kind of afforded with, you know, a rich dad, businessman in the States. So she gets back, and she and some of her, like, she hangs out with her best friends there, of course, and she's not thrilled that they really want her to learn a choreographed dance with them that they'll all perform together on the fourth night of the wedding ceremonies. So the idea is that the bride will have a dance and the groom will also have a dance that will happen that night. Except then she meets Bilu, who is the dance instructor. And Bilu turns into like the one bright light in these 3 months that is that whirlwind of planning this multi-day wedding. Bilu is just, she's so lovely. She's really funny. She's gentle. She even understands the kind of music that Isha wants to dance to, that Isha's not really into kind of the current contemporary Bollywood music. She's more into like, what are the movies that she grew up with and what's the music from that? And, you know, as they... As Isha is learning this dance, like, she's just transported sometimes. It's the one oasis in this time. And so she starts to kind of fall for Bilu. And she doesn't know if Bilu feels the same way. I mean, Isha also doesn't know the guy she's going to marry. She hasn't met him yet. He doesn't show up. He doesn't show up on the page until 70% into the book, which I thought was super interesting. But again, just showing like, no, this marriage is so arranged. It's not like, hey, do you want to hang out and get to know each other and see if you vibe with each other? It's like, no, sorry, you're getting married. That is what it is. And so, you know, there's this, she's falling for Bilu. All the while, she is every day getting closer to this future that she's not looking forward to, where she knows she's going to be unhappy. And so the question at the end of it, of course, is can she put aside her mother's expectations long enough to fight for a happily ever after with this woman that she loves? And so you remember how last year I started watching a whole bunch of Bollywood movies?
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. And I still watch them, maybe not as frequently as I did then, but I've seen well over a dozen. And I feel like I was training to read this book and I didn't even know it. Because it reads like a love letter to some of the most famous Bollywood romances and rom-coms. And so I'm going to say, again, this is absolutely my official recommendation. I completely loved it. I highly recommend it. But I really think you should try to watch at least a few of the films before you try to read this. Or just keep an open mind if you're not going to do that, especially if you're a Western reader or somebody who's not familiar with this context, that there's things you're going to come across that may not make as much sense to you. It's like reading a Bollywood film, I guess, is how I would put it. Mm. So there are things around how the book is structured or certain things that we see or shifts in perspective that don't necessarily make sense if you're just reading a romance novel, but it absolutely would make sense if you were watching a film. And so that actually endeared me to it. So for example, like there are absolutely like, I'm reading and it's mostly in Isha's perspective, but then it goes over to Bilu's perspective. And I was like, what's happening there? And I was like, oh, because it's a film scene. Or at one point there's a scene with like Isha's dad. And I was like, how does Isha's dad get a perspective? Right. Because if this was a film, you need this scene. It only works if this scene is in there. It keeps things going. Yeah. Like I loved that. I cannot believe the author pulled this off. Because one of the really absolutely key core elements to a Bollywood romance is dance numbers, like, or it's like songs, like it's music, it's dancing, it's all of that. And how does that work? And some of them are so emotional and you see people being transported from like, okay, I'm in this room in this house in India, but now I'm singing and dancing in the Alps. And it actually has a couple things like this here. So like she's practicing dancing with Bilu, but then she's imagining that they're out kind of in this field or they're out and their costumes are changing. And I was like, oh, well done. And there's one in particular. I haven't checked in with the author because I don't go back and talk to authors before I talk about my recommendations. But I'm pretty sure that this one, I mean, obviously it's not a song. I'm reading it, but like it would be a song if it were a film. I think it's the replacement for the sex scene because there are no sex scenes in Bollywood films. You can't do that. But there are some movies where you watch it and you're like, I think they're banging during this song. Like this song is a sex scene. That's just what it is. And so I love that because it's so appropriate because this book is especially hearkening to the films of the 1990s and the early 2000s. Like there's not even kissing in those movies. And so they're also the movies that Isha loves the music from. There's a chapter near the end too. I'm not going to say what happens, but it is fucking bonkers. It is completely bonkers. It makes no sense in a romance novel. But if you have seen films like Dil Chahta Hai at the or Doom, like it makes all the sense in the world. Because I was reading it on a plane and I was like, what is happening? And then I clued in and I started to laugh and laugh because I was like, this is actually sublime. Like it's perfect. Oh, I think, you know, I really want to applaud the author because this, I would say it's a novella length. Like I think it only took about 3 hours to read the whole thing, start to finish. Mm-hmm. But despite being that length, we get really great insight into who Isha is, what it is like for her, because she is that non-resident Indian. She doesn't really feel like she fits here in India, but she also has the full weight of the family expectations, particularly from her mother, who has been continuing to live in India. She hasn't been living this life alongside Isha. And I also really like the story has trans representation too. And really strong representation. Oh, cool. It's handled really beautifully, really lovely. The author is also trans. And so I've been learning Hindi on Duolingo. I was doing it mostly because I wanted to be able to know, like, are the subtitles on this movie good or are they crap?
So I'm going to read it.
Yeah. So it helped a little bit with because there are some Hindi words that come in here and there. There's a lot of words I don't know yet, though. So I was doing a lot of like, okay, I had Google Translate open on a laptop next to me so I could just type words in to find them. And for the most part, it's kind of fine if you know or if you don't know. But I'm so glad that I've been learning Hindi because particularly when it comes to the trans representation, when we start to find out that someone is trans, this is a language kind of like French, how there's masculine and feminine verb conjugations. And a character uses a masculine verb conjugation and then in talking about her childhood and then corrects herself and uses a feminine conjugation. And it was such a subtle way to drop that piece of information before it's addressed in English.
Wow. Yeah.
And I just thought that was really, it was really good and really interesting. It also has like other, it just works in all these other tropes from Bollywood that are amazing. So like the first time, like the idea that a female character, like wind will be blowing in a room. Like you're in a room. There are four walls around you and wind is blowing people's hair. And you're like, what? Why? How? And so there's this paragraph I'm going to read you because I thought it was like, it's sweet and heartwarming, but also kind of funny and totally makes sense if you've seen the movies. Her train of thought was interrupted by Bilou, who made a happy noise and dropped her bag gingerly on the floor before rushing over to open the sliding windows and step out in the sun. Okay, well, that's not fair because she's outside. Whatever. Isha could feel a slight breeze as they opened. She watched Bilou's hair blow about in the wind as she basked, her hands on the balcony's railing, almost striking a pose. Radiant, Isha thought, her heart hammering into her chest. And so you kind of feel that. But like, there's constantly, like, if it's a romance, if it's a romance film in Bollywood, there is blowing hair. There is always rain. There was rain. There is often like one person, like a man like driving a motorcycle with a woman freaking out on the back. We had one of them, like Isha driving and Bilou freaking out on the back. Like there were just so many things that made me think of so many different films that I thought it was really lovely. I'm sure as a, you know, white Canadian person, there are layers. There are things that I missed. There are moments that I didn't pick up on that might have been specific to a particular film that I just haven't seen yet. Mm-hmm. But I loved it so much. The character, like, it just has so much heart and humor. And it made me laugh many, many times. And it also just made me feel really big feelings. And especially towards the end, like I said, I was reading it on a plane. And when I was starting to really feel feelings, I could feel like my, like when I have physical reactions to things sometimes. And so I was like pulling my hands up to like up to my face or up near my chest, like doing this, like, oh my goodness. I loved it. It's called Dulania. Like I said, it's by Talia Bhatt. I actually also think that the pen name of the author is a little bit hilarious. Apparently it's not on purpose because I did ask about this. Like when I got the advanced reader copy, I said, hang on. Is this like a play on the famous Bollywood actress Alia Bhatt's name? And she was like, funny you should ask, but actually no. And I was like, well,
still cute. Womp womp.
I loved it. I think it's absolutely worth checking out. And I hope it gets turned into a film because like it's all right there. It's just
she can write the whole, yeah, just write, do the script, the movie.
Absolutely.
Script.
Yeah. Easy. So that's it. That is all for this episode. Thank you so much for joining us. If you've enjoyed it and you haven't subscribed yet, please make sure you do so you get that sweet, sweet notification in your app that we have a new episode out. If you have a friend that you think would like us, tell them to start listening. And if you do want to support us, we have links in our show notes to our Ko-fi and Substack, which you can also have a paid subscription for if you are inclined.
Or if you want to connect with us on your favorite social media sites, we have links in the show notes for that too. Or you can just search for Queerly Recommended on most social media sites or email us at podcast@queerlyrecommended.com. Goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Queerly Recommended, the podcast where we recommend queer books, film, fuck. All right, let me try this again.
Doing great. You're doing great.
Doing great. It's gonna be great. I got this.
It's going to be a good day.
It's going to be a good day. Hello, I got this. Why does this always get me?
I don't know, but I love it.
I don't know. Okay.